It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Great panel to talk about the latest news from Apple, including a price drop for the existing MacBooks. But should you wait till the spring or fall? Maybe. We'll also take a look at Apple's amazing success with the retail stores. Tim Cook has some numbers. The iWatch, just a little bit. And we answer the question, for once and for all, does iTunes suck? Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 338, recorded February 19th, 2013, The Retail Cruise. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your direction, like affordable business and personal documents you can trust. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW to receive $10 off at checkout. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell last year's gadgets. Find out what your used iPad, MacBook, iPhone, Galaxy S, or other smartphone's worth at Gazelle.com. And by RingCentral. I love my cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is just $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial, and when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones total. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. And by audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, visit audible.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers your Apple needs in great, almost one would say obsessive depth. And that's because we've got obsessive Mac fans here. Starting, let's see, where should I go? I'll go left to right. Actually, I'll go right to left. Andy Inatko affixing his pop filter even as we speak. Hello, Mr. Inatko.
But I'm surprised that the second pop filter is in a very surprising location.
No, we don't want any plosives on this show.
Look how clear he looks.
No unattended plosives. Doesn't he? Oh, you haven't been here since we sent him the Mac Mini. And he's got files. You were the guy who suggested the Mac Mini. You said he's got a Core 2. Why, that's not nearly sufficient. And look how beautiful he looks. You can you can see the detail on Wonder Woman's corset.
Yeah, again, I'll do some shopping for some Barbie clothes to get her a nice little, like, you know, Givenchy little sweater.
Chad, you're getting really good at the Zoom. One would almost think you'd pre-program that in. Also with this rare appearance of the flightless, actually the flighted Alex Lindsay. Good to see you
here till this afternoon.
He's back on a plane.
Off on a plane, but only for a couple days.
Hey, is this a different kind of?
You guys gave it to me.
You put yellow tape around it so we wouldn't lose it. Okay.
You know what's funny is
this is the adapter for the big MagSafe.
Notice it's harder to pull off when you put that extra adapter on it. It's like it doubles up the magnet.
Yeah, it's like it's a double magnet.
Yeah.
Well, I don't mind that. Do you mind that?
I love it.
Yeah, no.
I think it's a feature, not a bug.
It feels like it goes in good.
Yes.
We just got a new MacBook Air around here, and that has the big MagSafe now. So all the new laptops
have MagSafe. Everything's been upgraded.
Welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to be here.
Also here with us, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. Hello, Renee.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome
back.
Pleasure
to join you.
Yeah, nice to have you. Breaking news, Apple employee laptops hacked in the same way the Facebook employee laptops were hacked last week. Apple says they were visiting. It was just a few of them. No data was lost. They were visiting, according to Ina Fried and All Things D, a software developer's site. That had been hacked, apparently.
Consenting adults.
Consenting software developers. Consenting geeks.
They were only trying to learn new skills to make software better for the customers. They're only guilty of loving their customers too much.
Now, remember, Java is not on Macintoshes, at least starting with OS X Lion. And I presume that these engineers are using the latest version of OS X. However, perhaps they needed to use OS X and Java for whatever they were up to. Also remember that at least on the Macintosh, if you don't use Java for 35 days, it gets turned off.
What if they were working on the Java patch? That would be ironic.
They must have been. They're doing something with Java, right? Also, Safari and Chrome both say, hey, are you sure? Are you really sure you want to run Java on this site? So there were many protections to keep them from being compromised. This is, by the way, a known compromise, a known vulnerability in the Java plugin. Oracle's had the worst trouble with this. Apple has not been able to keep up with the patches either. Apple, as you know, does their own version of Java for Macintoshes. And Facebook says it was the victim of a targeted attack last month using the same Java flaw. Reuters implied that it was the same people doing it, but I don't think that that's necessarily the case. I think it's just...
That's the new way.
A lot of people are... See, it says Apple, Mac computers hit by hackers who targeted Facebook, said Reuters. I don't think that's accurate necessarily.
But it's a good headline.
Yeah.
I think that's the issue. It's a good headline.
It's a nice exclusive in the front of it.
Apple was recently attacked by hackers who infected the Macintosh and computers of some employees. The same software was used to launch attacks against Facebook. That does not mean the same people, because this is a well-known Java flaw that a lot of people are taking advantage of, right?
Oh, I think that the information is so thin right now.
Right.
Unfortunately, I picked the wrong hour to like leave and do some errands. But by the because I came back like 15 minutes before showtime with like two emails from my editor saying, "Hi, can you write something like right now about this?" And so I came.
Well, there's nothing to say.
Exactly. I mean, everybody's quoting the same Reuters article. Nope. And so we can't really guess that these are independent incidents. We can't guess that this is a coordinated attack. We can't guess that this is one government that's trying to do their own little test missile firings, where it's not just trying to test your own equipment, but also to send the message to other people that, hey, look what we can do. We literally know nothing other than what Apple has confirmed, which is that there was an attack. Employee computers got compromised. No customer data was compromised. And it was using a Java exploit. Surprise, surprise. And hopefully we'll know more sometime in the next 24 hours.
Yeah, it could have been the same thing that others, all of us, not me, but because I turned off Java, but anybody who didn't turn off Java is suspect to. Remember, last month, the Department of Homeland Security said disable Java in your browser. I mean, this is but it comes on the heels of President Obama's State of the Union, where he mentioned, this concern over Chinese hackers, the Mandiant story saying that the Chinese military... There's a unit that is orchestrating a series of attacks, not on U.S. military, but on U.S. companies. It's business warfare, not cyber warfare.
Yeah. And maybe Alex can chime in on this too, but it's always been, for the past at least 2 or 3 years, to my knowledge, every business person that's sent to China is given the advice, buy a new laptop and burn it when you leave. Do not use any personal email. Do not do any personal unsecured business transactions anywhere connected to any sort of a Chinese network, because if you are above a certain profile level, there is an excellent chance that you are being targeted by a government-backed hacking squad that wants to get access not to military secrets, but just to find out if this person is trying to get secure a bid to work here in China. I want to know what all the back channel communications are there. As a matter of fact, just a few weeks ago that it came out that some business people were actually being blackmailed by sort of people who were in that sort of loop in China, and suddenly said, well, here's some embarrassing emails. I bet I can really get some extort some money out of these people if I just, you know, try to feather my own nest instead of what I'm doing on the clock.
It's industrial espionage. That's the word.
It's very easy to blow this out of proportion. But nonetheless, we have to understand that we don't know what we know. We don't know what the scale of the thing is right now.
I guess here's the point for us is that the same vulnerabilities that Windows users who allow Java in the browser have been susceptible to also hit the Macintosh.
Well, the question is, how long do we want to keep? I mean, I think that the problem is for us is that Java is so embedded.
Well,
that it's very
Apple's
hard
done everything it can. It doesn't bundle Java. You have to download it explicitly.
Right.
It says it turns it off after 35. I mean, what more can you do?
At this point, like, I think that I really do want my screensaver to be a picture of like a Ford Pinto with a Java bumper sticker on it, because it has any
unsafe has any, at any speed.
Exactly. Has any logo like been so totally trashed by violent violent danger of use?
Well, not only that, I don't know how it is on Macintosh, but when you try to install Java on Windows these days, it also says, I'd like to install this and that. There's I think it wants to install the McAfee security scan.
The ASK toolbar.
I mean, come on. Oracle, could you tarnish this brand any worse?
there's a lot of institutions, schools, governments that have Java just as their runtime, as their tools are built in, their web tools, their internal tools. And the IT departments keep people on Java using it, and it's not computers they control. So they're right. always going to be vulnerable to this.
Well, if you want to play Minecraft on a Mac, right, Chad? You have to install Java.
Yeah.
But that's different than the browser plugin.
Luckily, it is different than the browser plugin.
So disable it in your browser. It should be disabled anyway, but if it's not disabled, disable it now.
Well, you know, unfortunately, Java. It's very difficult to uninstall it on Chrome. I mean, you have to go through multiple steps.
It's built into Chrome as a plugin, as is Flash.
Yeah.
The advantage of doing that, of course, from Google's point of view, is they can keep it up to date. You don't have to. They do. But the problem is that these patches are not coming fast enough.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I think we're going to see whether it's, DDoS attacks or, these attacks on Java. I mean, this is the next frontier,
there's always something.
I mean, we've seen it be, I think it was a lot of, I think that the big thing that's happening now is that it's becoming more industrial. So we've had a lot of hackers that are doing it for a long time. But I think that now we're talking about governments really getting involved. And it's not just the Chinese government. I mean, we obviously, there's most people suspect that we were connected to, Stuxnet.
Oh, we wrote Flame. Sure, the NSA and other governments worked on things like Flame and Stuxnet.
But I think we're starting to see an industrialization of this process, of the cyber war, that we haven't seen in the past. I think it's been a little less organized.
The difference between Flame and Stuxnet is those were aimed at, that was cyber warfare. This is industrial intelligence and espionage.
Right.
But it's still prevalent. And, of course, let's not forget, there's also the run-of-the-mill hackers who are trying to get into your system and steal credit card numbers and take it over, zombie it, and so forth. So, basically... The onus is on us to protect ourselves, and antivirus won't necessarily protect you from things like that, because if you say you've got Java, you've got the browser plugin turned on, and you say, I want to run this program, you're explicitly giving permission to a program to run, and no security software, the worst it's going to do is what it already does, which is say, are you sure this might be dangerous? And you say, yes, I want to run it. It can't override that. Otherwise, you'd say, I'm getting rid of this crap. It's keeping me from doing anything. Yeah. Will, if you have what is this? Is it Simon? This the program that watches outbound
Snitch.
Little Snitch. If you have Little Snitch running, will it? I guess it'll say Java's talking to a server. But again, if you explicitly run it, you're going to say, that's supposed to. So this is. I mean, if an Apple developer can be bit by this,
right?
Numerous Apple developers. What's the solution? Now I'm not using Chrome on the Macintosh. I've had problems with it before, but that's a good reason not to. And if you're using Safari, it, unlike Chrome, where you have to go into a user /config and
It's
through. A hard thing to go through.
So you're on your settings page, then you have to hit Show Advanced Settings. Then it's under Content Settings, which doesn't make any sense.
Well, at least they have so it isn't
but
config anymore.
But you don't see it. You have to go down to Plugins, disable individual plugins, go to another page, and then there's Java. And that's how you disable it. I mean, it is very confusing.
That's a lot. That's pretty deep.
Text-based adventure game.
Yeah. And meanwhile, in congratulations to Apple, in Safari, you just go to Security. And in the web content tab, it's enable or disable Java. Just uncheck that. Yeah. And it will be unchecked by default, by the way. And even uncheck itself if you don't use it.
Yeah. In Opera, you can even do it just from the pull-down window underneath the file menu. It's
Are you
quick.
Using Opera now?
Now that it's WebKit? I haven't switched to it. I now have like a multiple browser strategy where Opera is my burner, my burner browser, where it's always set in safe mode, and I also burn all my history as soon as I use it. It's good to have a separate browser like that where whenever I need to just jump out, do a quick search for something, and then jump back out again, or whenever someone has sent me a link to something. And I don't know who the source is, and I've got even an 8% worry that this is something odd about this URL. I will do it inside Opera, where I know that they can't get it's sealed off and they can't get access to stuff.
Clever, very clever. They're moving to WebKit. I don't think they're WebKit yet, but they've decided.
ICE is going to be WebKit.
So they're going to make their engine based on WebKit, which could be a good thing. WebKit is what Safari is based on. Apple contributes to the WebKit open source community.
So does Google, so does BlackBerry, so does...
Internet Explorer and Firefox are the only two major browsers that don't use WebKit.
Well, and one of the questions we're having on the IRC is what is the difference between Java and JavaScript?
Ah, very important. Yeah, Jimmy Mack asked that, and they're not the same at all. Not unrelated, even.
Yeah.
So now you can disable JavaScript, and lots of people like Steve Gibson say it's a good idea to disable JavaScript and only re-enable it selectively on sites you need it. Most of the web, including all of our sites, require JavaScript. It's a very common client-side scripting language. It is not the same as Java and is not prey to these vulnerabilities. However, because it's a scripting language, it's often used in other attacks. So lots of people use NoScript and other plugins to protect themselves from this. But that's, to me, it's a major hassle. You turn on NoScript, and then what happens is every site on the web breaks.
You suddenly realize how often JavaScript is being used as soon as you turn that off.
And what you have to do is individually, as you get to a site, you go, no, this one's okay. The problem is, in this case, and I think this is often the case, this was probably a very well, I don't know what the name of the site was, but I'm sure it was a standard, well-known, commonly used software development site. And what happens is, and I know this because it's happened to us, most sites have had this problem, if there's a flaw in the content management system used on the website, hackers first attack that, they get on the website, they bury into the website exploits, which then, like this Java exploit, will attack anybody who goes to the site. So you could be going to a completely legitimate site and enable Java because you think it's legit, or enable JavaScript because you think it's legit, and it isn't. So I don't know what to say. just be very careful. By the way, we have that Pinto for you. Here's the Pinto with Java. There you go. That's your new screensaver.
Thank you to
who did that? That's great.
Oh gosh, let me check.
Man, you guys are fast.
That is quick turnaround.
We got some Photoshop wizards out there.
That was CamboZone.
By the way, thank you, Microsoft and Adobe, for screwing Mac users. Okay, I'm moving on. You can't now. You have to subscribe to both. It's very hard to buy Photoshop alone. You have to. They really want you to do that creative content thing, and Microsoft, same thing. They really want you to subscribe. And if you buy a copy of Office, it works on one machine only. You can never transfer it. I don't know what Adobe's up to, but I was trying to buy Photoshop. I just wanted to upgrade to they say, no, you really want Creative Cloud. It's only $49 a month. Come on, you really want that. I don't.
We've all moved to Creative Cloud.
You're using it because you're creative.
Well, we turn it on and off, so we don't buy the yearly.
You buy it as needed.
Yeah, it's a little bit more expensive to do it that way, but we'll buy it for a month. Like, we're doing an event where the problem is we have a lot of laptops. And I'm not putting Photoshop on all of them, but I don't know which ones are going to necessarily need Photoshop. So we'll flip one on log in to use it specifically. So the cloud actually, I think, works pretty well for us, the Creative Cloud that Adobe has put together.
If you really do use all those apps, it's probably cheaper to subscribe.
We don't use them all. We just use, yeah.
But I don't. Well, now, fortunately, Lightroom is still not. You can still buy Lightroom outright.
Right.
When that happens, I'm just going to plot. I'm going to Aperture. I'm going to say goodbye. Thank you, Adobe.
Well, and
nice
and
knowing
you,
you.
I mean, we make a lot of decisions. Like so for instance, there are things that we have to use, for instance, After Effects for. But what is on every computer is Final Cut 10 and Motion, because Motion is $50 and can do most of what we need. You know, rather than, you know, so, you know, and that's the, I think at some point in time, you know, that it they you know, there's a, you do have to make some financial decisions when you have enough computers to cover it. And I think that for what most people need to do, as far as like animation goes, I think that Motion's enough for that. Some of the higher level stuff we need After Effects for.
You can buy Motion. That's the Apple product. So you don't, they're not renting it yet.
No, they're not going to. And then the other thing is,
are they not going to?
No, I don't think so. I think Apple right now we haven't seen any Apple charge any upgrades at all.
They're a hardware
company.
They're not a software company.
Well, they keep on releasing upgrades for Final Cut and Motion and not charging for it. I mean, I'm not saying that they'll never charge for it, but Motion's the best deal out there as far as that goes. The hard part for Apple, though, I mean, you know, I think is that they still make it so simple. Like a lot of the new applications, I think Aperture is a good example of that. We'd love to see some more tools in there. I use Aperture. I don't use because I don't want to manage.
I like Lightroom.
I don't want to manage my files.
Lightroom. Lightroom 4 has offline storage.
It's great. I mean, that. I think Lightroom's great. I think that what happens is you get yourself into a system, and I got myself
into.
From what I do, Aperture is really, really good, and so I don't feel like I need to.
The
move.
Two advantages of Aperture: one, it's Retina, which Lightroom still isn't. Two, I don't think, and two,
you make books.
You can make books.
I make books.
Two and a half. It integrates with iPhoto, so you have one library, right. So you can kind of go back and forth. If you're a Mac user, Aperture does kind of make sense. Oh, three. C, it you can buy it at the App Store, and then you can install it on all your machines. Yep. And it's $70, which is not – Lightroom's still $300.
So. It's much less expensive. It's really fast to work with. It also – You can make books. Did I tell you about that?
And you can make books.
My wife loves
does it
books.
Work with
I now get hammered every time I go on a vacation and I don't make a book.
Oh, yeah.
If I don't make a book after a vacation,
Lightroom has Retina now. Good. And books.
Does it have books? I haven't. From when I made the decision, there was no books.
Too bad. It has books now, dude.
There you go. And I think Lightroom is great, by the way. I think that
it's $99 now? All right. So rewind and see three and two and a half.
Okay. Well, let me send some love for Aperture's way, because I have both of those apps. I like both those apps, but it just seems as though either Aperture is better tuned to the way that I think about the problems with a photo, or it's just simply better design, period. I can get to the image in my head a lot quicker with Aperture than with Lightroom. I understand what Adobe's trying to do by sort of promoting a workflow where you're going to start right here and we're going to move to the next workstation, then the next workstation, then the next workstation. To me, that just interferes with my own workflow, because sometimes I truly am in a position where I've got 400 pictures from Comic-Con that I want to triage and sort, and I can really make through a work through that way. Sometimes it really is just, though, that I've got these 10 pictures. I want to isolate one of them, do a quick, 20-minute fix, and then send it to somebody who's waiting for it. And I often just get my head sort of wrapped up in Lightroom's process instead of my own. And also, I just love the fact that there's that area of the picture looks a little bit blue. How do I target blue and change it to something that is a little more towards yellow? Oh, I slide this button here. Boom, done.
That's because I think that's more a matter of what you're used to.
But I also feel like, I think in general, when I think of Apple versus Adobe on all of their tools, if I want to do something quickly, I want to do it on an Apple product. If I need more control or deeper power, then I tend to use Adobe products. And that tends to be the...
I own them both. You know. And by the way, I didn't know this, but we're really behind on Lightroom. Not only does it do Retina, it's available in the App Store,
yep.
And it does books.
There you go.
It does one more thing about Aperture. Ever since they switched to the unified iPhoto Aperture library,
that's a nice feature.
Especially for people who have smaller SSD based machines, where you can have you can have iPhoto installed on your MacBook Air, and that's what you vacation with, that's what you travel with. When you get home after a week, you just simply integrate that right back into your Aperture library, and now you can do the big 27-inch cinema screen fine tuning and pre-publication pre-flight, and you didn't have to have this big huge heavy application running on this tiny little ultrabook in order to make it all work.
I am, I'm torn.
I do the same thing as Andy and Alex.
I don't know which to do, because you really do get
disoriented.
You get invested in one or the other. You know, I mean,
it's hard to do both.
Yeah.
I do Aperture all the time, and if I need to, I right click and open in Photoshop, and then I do everything else.
Well, that's my other problem. What's a good alternative to Photoshop now? Because I don't want to get in the Creative Cloud.
Well, I mean, I think that
should I be using Pixelmator?
Photoshop Elements or Pixelmator or Pixelmator.
Acorn's nice too, but I just learned Photoshop for so long. It's muscle memory now, and it would slow me down to switch to something else.
I think Pixelmator is great. It's, as I said, it's just I still have a hard time. I miss certain tools that I'm used to using in Photoshop.
And Elements is $80 on the App Store. Is this, how close is this to Photoshop? Maybe I should just get this.
It's pretty close. I mean, you can definitely do an awful lot with Elements. But Pixelmator and Elements are the two that I would consider.
I like Pixelmator.
Comparing.
Pixelmator feels more like Photoshop because it's got layers. Mm-hmm. Although Acorns get more and more like that. I like Pixelmator. Well, I own all of this stuff, all of the above, but get your workflow kind of in one rut, right?
Well, yeah, and I think that,
today I'm going to use Pixelmator. You know, you never get good at anything.
Well, Adobe's also sort of made things more accessible for, cheapskates like you and me. You know that Photoshop 1.0, all the source code has been posted online by Adobe. so now the color space is a little bit more limited than what
you
get.
So I can hack my own.
Yes. Yeah, but I mean, so long as you're just, you're okay with just black or white pixels.
Well, I own Photoshop 5. I don't really need 6. How do I get 5 back?
I know.
I can't. They don't offer it for download. I guess I have to pirate it, even though I own it.
I have to admit that I finally gotten used to some of the newer version
of
Photoshop.
You subscribe because it's a business expense.
Well, it is, and we use it a lot. I mean, I question whether I really need Photoshop, the full Photoshop, for a lot of what we use Photoshop for.
You know what?
I just do it because I know I have all the keys, and there are very obscure things that I do with it that I need the full version. But
one thing I use it for, which is stitching panos. So now I'm going to use
that.
Well, I got PT GUI. You talked about Huddle, I think, Andy, before. There's a couple of good... Huddle's free, right? I think it's open source free. And then PT GUI, which is not free. It's kind of expensive. It's 179 euros. But it does get this. This might be my pick this week. I've just started using it. It'll stitch up, down, left, right. It'll stitch any... You know, you just get a bunch of photos. And it'll do HDR.
Nice.
So you could do an HDR pano, which is a kind of an interesting... You know why I'm thinking about all this? Because in the fall, I'm going to on this, like, Italy, Greece, Turkey trip. So I want to get my workflow now so I'm ready. Because I didn't take any pictures in New Orleans, and I realized, you know, I did it with the iPhone. I thought, I think I cheated myself. I should have used this opportunity to take some better pictures.
Yeah. I think that the ultimate sign of respect I can pay any camera phone is the first day that I decide that I don't need to take my real camera with me. I will just use the phone. I try to wrap my head around this idea of people using that instead of a proper camera, and I just can't get that myself. The number of times where you're in this space and you take an okay photo and it's perfectly fine, and then you get back home and the memory of that space starts to fade a little bit. You realize that, oh man, if I had just made space in my bag exactly this big for a tiny little camera that cost me all of $300, that window light wouldn't be blown out. I'd be able to see detail back there. And
you know what I did? I'm a bad man.
I'll bet I'll meet George Lucas sometime again.
No, I exactly. I splurged on an OMD, an Olympus OMD.
Oh, did you?
Because it's so compact and little.
Is it working for you?
I don't know. It's coming today. In fact, I might leave in the middle of the show.
I would. That's a very envied camera for me.
Yeah, I thought a long time, and I really, you know, I have a 5D. I love the big camera. It's beautiful, full frame, but I wanted something light, and that's why I wouldn't carry the. I didn't want to go to New Orleans and walk down Bourbon Street with a 5D hanging on my shoulder.
Yeah.
It just seemed risky.
It's great to have something you can slip in, stick in a pocket, and plus there's so many circumstances I get into where if you have a tiny little pocket camera and you ask permission to take a picture someplace you're not supposed to take pictures, if they will think that A, you're just a damn tourist, so there's no harm done, and B, all you're going to do is take a snapshot and you'll be gone in 5 seconds, as opposed to, I'm just going to do a couple of camera lens switches and let me set my system with a couple of reflectors.
Anyway. Well, and this came up at both the Madonna concert and the Super Bowl. You can't bring a DSLR in. You can't. And in the Super Bowl, the rule was nothing more than 4 inches lens. Mm. So I could have brought the OMD in, and it would have been great pictures.
You need like a lens that you can build up. Like, just bring all the individual elements in.
That's just a piece of something, some glass.
That is a mask.
It's not. Exactly.
camera he's smuggling in. Yeah.
Well, I just, because it like drives me crazy. You're going to this thing and you want good pictures and they won't let you bring a good camera.
Well, no, you can get these 2X like photo extenders.
Yeah,
and each one costs you what, like one stop? So, yeah. So if you snap like 8 of them in a line.
Just hope they turn the lights up.
Exactly. So long as someone next to you is also taking a flash photo with like a magnesium flare that they're actually shooting at Beyonce with the bazooka, you're in there with half a chance.
If I'd had a decent camera, I would have pictures now of Paul McCartney right there, of Jesse Jackson right there. I would have had pictures of me at the Super Bowl. Although Lisa and I are in the Gigapan at the Super Bowl. We found it. Somebody found it.
You can zoom in.
You can zoom in. And Lisa's like this because the Niners didn't win. We're going to take a break. Come back with lots more. We're talking about Macintosh, and there's lots of news. Rumors, too. Tim Cook talking about Apple stores. Some very interesting. This is a good week. We finally got some stuff to talk about this week.
Beefy.
It's beefy. Also, a new version of iOS just came out. I can guess what it's fixing. We'll find out. But first, a word from our great folks at LegalZoom. This is a new sponsor for us. Have we talked about this on the show before? I think we might have once or twice. Boy, I'm really sensitive now to the need to protect yourself. And sometimes you just, you know, especially, you know, you're a little guy, little new startup, whatever. You can't afford a full legal team. LegalZoom's great. It's not a law firm, but it will help you do many of the legal jobs you need to do step by step at a much lower cost. And if you need an attorney, LegalZoom also has a set of attorneys that they've already vetted. There's reviews and there's all sorts of information. I'll give you an example. You know, when we first started Twit, I couldn't afford an attorney to do an LLC. Walked through the step-by-step process, and we're still the same LLC organization documents that I got in 2005 from LegalZoom we're using today. You can do a will there. The LLC starts at $99. The will, $69. A living trust, $69. Here's another one.
Trademark.
Trademark is huge. If you're a blogger,
yeah.
If you do anything publicly.
You can't just add TM to the end of everything.
No, that's not it.
But that's not
it's
enough.
Not hard
it's
not to enough. Do a trademark. I did the same thing. Trademarked, same thing, by the way. Trademarked Twit, the logo, and Twit, the name. And I'm glad I did. I think it was worth doing. Not very expensive. LegalZoom helps you with copyrights, patents, NDAs, and all of this through simple step-by-step questionnaires you can do online. Of course, great customer support. And there comes sometimes there's like a question you go, gee, I don't know. I wish I had some legal advice. They've got an extensive network of attorneys in their legal plan. Most states, they're vetted. They have fixed costs, so you know how much it's going to cost. And you can search the online profiles and unedited customer reviews to make sure you're getting somebody that you can work with. LegalZoom is an amazing thing. You ought to know about this. I think this is really transformational, frankly. It gives you, trust me, I know now, and I'll talk about this in another time, but you need to protect yourself. LegalZoom.com. Just let them know you heard it on MacBreak Weekly. Use the offer code MBW and our way of thanking you. We're just going to take $10 off. Just a little, you know, it's not a huge amount, but just a little thank you for mentioning that you heard it on MacBreak Weekly. MBW is the offer code at LegalZoom.com. Don't put this off. You'll be glad you did it. Trust me. LegalZoom.com. Let's see. Moving. You did see that just speaking of the Adobe pricing. We've played this on Twitter. I'm not going to play it again, but the Adobe CEO, he was in Australia, and they were asked, an Australian journalist said, why is it $1,400 more?
How can Adobe possibly justify charging up to $1,400 more for the exact same software delivered in Australia, delivered over the internet with no boxed copy compared to US prices?
Again, and I'll answer this question. When we look at the creative cloud and where the future of the creative
we're talking about traditional software, not the creative cloud.
The company, and we think that's the best offering for customers. We really believe that you know, if you look at what we've done with pricing there, it's actually a great value to our customers.
He asks him four more times, and the answer each time is when you look at the Creative Cloud, which is the subscription thing that Adobe clearly is what they want to sell you.
I think they're saying that the question was $1,400 more. And that's like was he saying for Australia versus US pricing?
Yes, for the downloadable software, not the Creative Cloud.
They must assume that, well, they're Australians. They must be drunk. They're probably not going to look at that buy screen too closely.
Apparently they did. And by the way, after this really kind of shameful performance, a week later, they lowered the price $1,400.
Oops. Yeah.
Thank you, Internet.
Yeah, exactly.
This is why I love the Internet, because, you know, a journalist, this happens all the time, journalists, and you've done this, I'm sure, Andy, peppers the CEO, come on, and they won't answer. So you post it on YouTube.
Right.
And all of a sudden, the price suddenly, magically goes down. I love that. I think that's wonderful.
Well, sometimes you have to really when I ask a question three times in a row, usually it's because I can't possibly believe that the answer that they're giving me is actually the answer they intend to give.
Right. So I want to make sure. Maybe you misunderstood.
Or I feel like you didn't just say that, did you?
That's harmful for you.
And sometimes it's really positive too. Like a cell phone contract that is truly unlimited data. I will that time.
Are you sure?
I think it was Exactly. I was saying, so I will say, so what I'm saying is that if my account activates on October 3rd, I activate Netflix HD streaming on November 4th and keep it going for 28 days. It will not, I will continue to be able to stream HD video at the end of that month, and it will not cost me a penny more than what I paid for your unlimited plan. Yes. All right, then.
That's worth following. You know, no, I agree with you. That's worth pressing. Saying, I really want to make sure. So that there's no loophole later. They go, well, what you didn't ask.
Yeah, well, there's a cap of 2 gigabytes, but it's unlimited 2 gigabytes.
Unlimited. Well, so many do that. Yeah. But this was good. This was a good example where it was like a politician where they ask one question, you just answer another one. Mm-hmm. And credit to the Australian journalist, and I don't have his name, who just said, no, you haven't answered my question. And four or five times he says it.
Well, I think Adobe, you know, this is a very important part of their business model is figuring out how to get people to subscribe because they, you know, a lot of what they're, you know, the Flash is not going to be, you know, what was a big growth area for them.
Right.
I think that they are getting to a point where, you know, Photoshop has reached about as many people as it's, I mean, it's still growing, but it's not growing like it used to.
And Australians, by the way, Dr. T in our chat room, Gizmodo Australia says, don't believe the price cut hype. It's still gouging you.
I think that it becomes clearer when some companies, and to their credit, like Apple, have dropped the price dramatically. And most of production software that we're looking at, most production software, except for Adobe, most production software is dropping in rates. I mean, so
is that because it's a larger universe of users?
Well, they're looking for a larger universe. They're looking for, you know, how do we move? You know, the reality is that the folks at the very top are, you know, competing more and more. If you're at the very top, you can still have $100,000 software, $50,000 software. But if you're in the below that top 2% or 3%, you're now competing with a much larger group of people, which opens up that market for production companies or production software companies to move in. But it also, if you're in that area, it becomes much harder to pay for that software.
You got to think piracy has something to do with it too. That
but also
they realize people could just steal it, and so
Africa, we do a lot of work in Africa, and people in Africa, you talk to them, they don't even consider buying it,
right?
Like they're not even having that conversation. That was a big thing with our school. Is like
let's be honest,
we have partners. Our partners, you know, between you know all the different partners are providing the software, legal copies for our school, and we made a big deal about that. Everyone else was like, okay, that's great,
yeah.
You know, it's like, right. But everybody else just
you crazy
know,
Americans,
downloads. Yeah, exactly.
But let's be honest. I bet everybody watching this show has at one time or another pirated Photoshop.
There was definitely a conversation we had when I was working at a visual effects company. We were talking about that, and we were talking about the fact that all of us, our first copy
that's
of Photoshop
how you got
was
it.
Always got it. Now we've
and it was a great way.
Copies.
Exactly, it was a great way to learn Photoshop, and then you ended up buying it.
Right, exactly.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Renee. I keep interrupting.
No. I was just going to say that Apple's model is also really different. They want to sell more Macs and more iOS devices, so they don't software is an ecosystem enhancement for them, so they're not as price sensitive. That it's a company that just makes software for their businesses.
Yeah.
Well, and I do think I think that is the case, and I think that is and I think Adobe is very fortunate that Apple doesn't take some of its billions and point at that direction. You know, Steve kind of gave up on that process and went more consumer. If Apple decided to go into that and started building things that look a lot like Photoshop, that were. And I don't know if Apple's even capable of doing that. I mean, when you look
at... Of course they are. If you said, I'm gonna invest $200 million over the next 2 years, I'm going to bring in a team. It doesn't have to be in Cupertino. I'm going to bring in a team. Your charge is to make a better Photoshop built on Apple hardware to take advantage of the latest Apple hardware. Of course they could do that. A couple hundred million, no problem. Mm-hmm. But the reason they don't make that calculation is because they also want to preserve the channel. They can't. It's bad for the ecosystem. If Apple starts taking over, then only Apple makes software for Macs. That's not good either.
But I think that it's also bad. I mean, it's also bad for the ecosystem to have it be $800 for a professional. The thing is that there's a lot of opportunity when you start lowering that. You know, pushing that price down.
That's what they did. I mean, they made Core Image so that, you know, you could make Pixelmator and you could make Acorn. So instead of making their own software, they made it much easier for people to make that kind of software for
them. They could, but I mean, what it really takes to go head-to-head is $100 million of development. I mean, you know, it's...
But also compare even let's leave imaging for a while and get something a little bit more directly head-to-head. Compare even Pages to Microsoft Word. Pages is is the word processor choice for 85 to 90% of what people want to do. For that other 10%, it's not even something you can consider because it's just not a, it doesn't have the same power, doesn't have the same workflow, doesn't have the same collaboration features as Microsoft Word does. But that's okay because this is a $15 app that just needs to make most people happy. If Apple ever started to get into imaging wars with Adobe, man, that's a lot of pain. That's crawling on broken glass over miles and miles and miles. That's new staffing.
Well, the rumor,
on a larger
level,
unless they were to find someone who can actually deliver Photoshop caliber, not a replacement for Photoshop, but Photoshop caliber creative editing like that, I can't imagine them wanting to staff up to that extent. Look at the problems they had when possibly the most important app that they have on the iPod, possibly the most important app they have on macOS. I'm not saying the most, but I'm saying you could make a case that there is no app more important, more critical to Apple than iTunes for the desktop. There's no a person with an iPod or an iPhone wants to do with it, you got to have a good podcasting app. And they completely punted the podcast app.
I think there's a
iTunes
reason.
iTunes 11 is not great. It's not even good. It's gone down to sort of acceptable.
And yeah, well, that's a good question because iTunes is their bread and butter. And so you're saying you could throw $100 million, $200 million, half a billion dollars and not make a better product? Why doesn't Apple make a better iTunes?
I think it would be like picking up a porcupine. You can do it, but you got to really want
to
do that.
The rumor, there have been rumors.
That they're making one, but
basically after Adobe sandbagged the upgrade,
but they didn't
Apple
release
built
it.
No, and they continue to develop an app that if Adobe ever sandbagged Photoshop, Apple would release something for free. You know, that's the rumor is that they would, you know, go right after them, and they do have people working on it. And I don't know that from anyone inside. That's the rumor that has passed, you know, has been.
Well, can I just point out that Photoshop was much more advanced on Windows, probably still is more advanced on Windows. And so drop the bomb because
it's Final Cut Pro it.
Cut Pro it.
Yeah. Well,
and that worked well, didn't it?
I mean, the reason Lightroom isn't $500 is because Aperture is $70. Yeah. I mean, you know, they can only charge so much for it because Apple, you know, is going to provide something else. And I think it would benefit us as Mac users to have, more. And I think Pixelmator is great. I'd love to see Apple, you know, maybe absorb them and put the money in that really is required to move that down the path.
So I'm going to give you the reason why. I understand why the podcast app sucks, but I don't understand why iTunes sucks. So
or the I don't think it sucks. App. I just think it's surprisingly.
It sucks. No, Andy. Let's be honest. It sucks.
No, I don't think it sucks. I think that they're. I will start after defending it by saying it doesn't suck. Oh my God! What wonderful praise that is. Carve that in gold above the lintel, Apple. I have to vent a little bit at a problem that I was so sure this was a software bug with the first release that I thought because I'm trying to sync my I'm going to mention this because I think that a lot of people will suddenly have an aha moment. Oh my God, here's how I fix this problem. I try to sync TV shows that I've purchased onto my iPad. It will not, when I get to that page in the sync feature of the of iTunes, it will only show me like the first screenful of shows that I've purchased. So if I want to sync 30 Rock, I can't do it because I try to scroll down that list and will rubber band.
You're syncing it just wrong.
No. Well, see, I kind of am because I assume that just because this scrolling list of TV shows responds to like a scroll input that, okay, I guess it just doesn't think that there's more underneath that. Here's what was actually happening. I have to move the mouse outside of that little scroll view, but still inside the window because the entire rest of that scroll list is in like the populated unseen area of that window. So if I scroll the window content, I can see the rest of my TV shows. I simply can't scroll the list that exhibits scrolling behavior. And this is why I was not syncing anything, any of my TV shows for about a month.
Well, Andy, this is version 11.
Exactly. Yeah. That's
you're saying this doesn't suck?
I don't have any.
I'm saying it's streamlined. It's useful for what most people use it for. I think that they took a real step backward for it because this is a recurring theme that I tend to harp on, that there are two kinds of ways to make something easy. One is the sort of easy features that means you can learn this in one day. You got it in one day. But then there are the sort of features where after you're no longer a newbie, once you're using it at month two, month three, year one, year one and a half, year two, that makes it continually easier to use. I think that iTunes is a step forward in the first type of ease of use, but definitely a step backward in the second. I miss the fact that I can't, sometimes I'm, you know, you're working on a playlist, but you want to have that window open behind you. So as you sort of make your way through things, you can just simply random grab things and toss them in. iTunes 11 is optimized towards maybe having three, maybe four, and only occasionally really manipulating them. And I could go on for an hour on things I don't like about the way it works. I don't think it sucks, but I think that they are, it's such a bold statement about becoming a consumer-oriented company as opposed to a more broad appeal, everybody who likes machines that go Bing.
It's 90-90. Well, 90% of the people need 90% of the time.
Yeah, would you agree the podcast app on iOS sucks?
It sucks.
Okay, thank you.
It sucks. See, it's worse. It's absolutely useless. It does not do the job it was supposed to do. Not only that, but it also prevents you from using an alternative. What I hated the most about it was that if I have the podcast app on this iPhone, I don't even have the option of saying, well, what if I have... I have a playlist called Greatest Podcast Episodes Ever. So ever to like when WTF did that wonderful interview with Mel Brooks, that goes into a special playlist that says I don't a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, that Valkyrie interview on Jeff Goldberg's excuse me, another podcast. But the fact that they were podcasts means that I'm not allowed to listen to them within an iTunes playlist. They have to be accessed through the podcast app.
I think there's a reason
actually access them.
I think actually Apple is rejecting podcasts like they would reject a bad organ.
Oh, absolutely.
They're pushing them out. And this was always my great fear. You know, when Apple started including podcasts on iTunes, it was a great day for us and all other podcasters. It really improved our profile, but I always made me nervous because we were really dependent on Apple. And at this point, I think it's clear that Apple has decided, you know, they lost a big patent lawsuit last year on this subject. I think Apple has decided, and they can't do it overtly because they know they'd get the wrath of a lot of listeners, but they don't want podcasts to be part of iTunes. They want to push it out. They want to move it over to the side, and they want you to ultimately give up on the podcast app and use Downcast or some third-party app, and then eventually they'll kill it, and then they can say, hey, we don't do podcasts.
I'll let Renee
I'm not sure it's that. One of the problems Apple is facing with the iOS device is that they're breaking iTunes up into many constituent parts, and they have an iTunes U app instead of having all the iTunes U stuff in the iTunes app.
Why do that?
Yeah, well, the iOS ecosystem seems to favor single-purpose applications.
Right.
It's much easier. iTunes is a monstrosity, and part of that on the desktop is because they have to port the whole thing to Windows. So everything that they could possibly want to do with an iPhone or music is one gigantic monstrosity. But on iOS, it behooves them to have all these different apps because then they can build specific interfaces, especially on the more constrained iPhone screen. For those
things.
That
makes sense, actually, yeah.
And my understanding is that the people who made the podcast app, you know, Apple has... Like the remote app. The remote app did not get updated for a long time because that engineer was taken off.
Still
and given
sucks.
Another job. Yeah, and he was brought back to it. And the disadvantage of not being part of the music app, which has, you know, more consistent engineers behind it, is I think there were two guys, an engineer and a designer, who put it out. And they seemed really proud of it. And other people at Apple seemed really proud of it when it shipped. But then they had bugs and they tried to fix the bugs. And now they're really busy trying to get iOS 7 out. And it's just... As much as Apple has nearly infinite resources, billions and billions of dollars, they don't have infinite engineers. They are starved for good engineers.
That's the real question. Yeah. There aren't good people out there.
Yeah, everyone's starved.
if you're in college right now, become a developer because there's a yes. desperate need for not just day average grunt developers. There's a desperate need for brilliant.
Which take after you get out of college often takes 10 years of development.
Right.
I mean, when we think of great programmers.
Here's why I think Apple is actually actively trying to kill podcasting. Because they lost that lawsuit and they were forced to pay $8 million, they now also license it. Podcasting costs them money. And no one knows how much, but day in, day out, podcasting costs them money. The ability to subscribe to a podcast on iTunes costs them money. And I just think that they're thinking, well, we don't make any money on this. We can't charge for podcasts. It's costing us money. who needs it? But now they don't want to do it overtly. Yep. But I
my
think
sister
that's,
loves
think,
the new I, podcast app. She subscribes to one or two television podcasts at a time. When they stop having the television series, she gets rid of them. And as long that podcast app is perfect for someone who doesn't use podcasts the way that we do, that doesn't have a list like Andy's, that doesn't want to sync a ton of stuff. If you have four or five podcasts you happen to like, if you want to use the stations button to find a couple things that are interesting, it's a fine app for you. And Apple just, once again, is not showing interest in the power user segment.
By the way, Google does a bad job with podcasts, too. Their Google Listen is awful.
Well, it's gone.
But exactly. That's why I disagree with you. That's Google realized that their app, they don't need to have a Google Listen app because there are wonderful third-party apps out there that do the job just fine. Rather than coming out with a half-butted version of it to sort of encourage people not to use it, they simply said, okay, we're done. We're not going to update this anymore.
Smart.
If Apple really had no interest in it anymore in podcasts, then they would simply not have released it or said, okay, we're never going to update this.
Well, I think
again.
That's the next step. Just kill. Okay. I mean, that thing is such a.
I think my guess is that when a big company releases a piece of software that's this bad, and it is awful, it absolutely sucks. The story that I'm usually told by current and former team members a couple or two or three years later, which is that this was a huge 4-star, well-funded project. At some point, as they were working on this, it became a zero priority for the company, and they just simply were forced to limp this across the finish line in as dignified a fashion as they possibly could. So I don't think it's a matter of sabotage. I think that it's an indication of a lack of will on Apple to have a really good podcasting app baked right in.
If we look at it was supposed to come out at WWDC along with all the iOS 6 stuff. I believe it was supposed to be shown off on stage, and it was late, so it got kind of released in between, which was really odd. It wasn't at the WWDC, and it didn't wait until the iPhone event. And Apple, and Guy English wrote a great article about this, I think a year ago, about Apple and retention, where people and engineers are their biggest problem now, because all the early iPhone engineers have had their stock options vest. All the second generation, the App Store people, all of them. If you look, and I think Gruber picked this up, Dan Frommer wrote about it, over the last few weeks, the amount of people, good iOS engineers, leaving Apple has gone up. So if they're struggling to get iOS 7 out, if they have a constrained amount of engineers, they are not exactly what Andy said. They are not wasting a lot of them on the podcast. Yeah.
And this is why you want to be a brilliant programmer, because you'll make millions of dollars. You can retire.
Well, or not only retire, but you're going to make more money building your own apps because you know it inside and out.
And do a startup.
Do your own thing. Build your. They have their own ideas that no one's listening to.
Great developers gold standard.
We're also overlooking the obvious here. The reason why there isn't enough people to work on a podcast app is because those 100 engineers they put on the Watch project. It must be bigger than we even imagined.
Yeah,
100 engineers on
100.
Watches.
Actually, more interesting. More interesting is the number of engineers, and I think it is in the thousands they have on CPU. And we're going to talk about CPU hardware and where Apple's going with that in just a bit. We're talking Mac. Renee, we got such a good team here. Anything you want to know, you get in the chat room, you say, talk about this, and we will. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Core, in a rare personal appearance. We got Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times, and we're going to take a break and come back with more. We have an old MacBook Air that that broke, basically. And I realize I can actually sell this on Gazelle.com with no bad conscience. They will buy broken hardware as well as unbroken hardware. You know about Gazelle.com? If you've got a drawer, a closet, or a storage space full of old technology that you don't want anymore, it actually is worth money at Gazelle.com. I want you to visit Gazelle.com to sell your iPhone, your iPad, your Mac.
Tribulation to iPhone.
Even your, let's say you've got a Samsung Galaxy S3 and you said, enough Android. I want to go to an iPhone 5. Here we go. Let's take that and get an offer. What shape is it in? It's in good shape. All right. Next. This is what it looks like. Free of water damage. Yeah. I didn't drop that one in a glass of water. $194 for that S3. Well, that's almost going to get... That's an old phone, too. That's going to get me real close to my iPhone 5. You got an iPhone 4S. They even hold value better. Let's see. AT&T iPhone 4S. is worth $215 in good condition. Now, what happens is you get all these old gadgets together, You pile them in a box. Actually, Gazelle will send you the box, postage paid. They pay the postage on anything worth more than a buck. You fly it back to Gazelle, and days later, you're going to get a check or a PayPal credit, or better yet, an Amazon gift card. That's worth 5% more, by the way, which I like. And since we all use Amazon nonstop, that extra 5% come in handy. GAZELLE.com. They even buy broken iPhones and iPads. They don't give you as much if it's broken, but still, it's, you know, better than throwing it in the trash. Gazelle's paid $50 million to 500,000 customers. It's fast. It's free. Their data experts will even wipe your data for free. I think it's just a great deal. Gazelle.com. Recycle the easy way. Sell it on Gazelle. So I've been thinking a little bit. You know, Apple just dropped the price of the 13-inch Retina MacBook Pro for $200, right? And they speed bumped the other ones. And I don't know what rumors you're hearing at iMore, Renee, but I think this is not the time, this is my supposition, to buy a Apple computer, a Macintosh. And I'll tell you why. I just read a really good article. It's an older article on AnandTech, talking about the challenge Intel's facing. Apple, we know, has over 1,000 engineers working on chips. And these are not just for iOS. I think it's pretty much a given. I know everybody at Intel thinks this, that eventually Apple's going to replace Intel with their own chips. Does that sound right, Renee?
I would be surprised if there were no skunkworks. I mean, they had a project a couple of years ago to get Darwin booting on ARM architecture. But
I think it's inevitable.
One of those things. You know, it's like they had Intel running before PowerPC right. Switch.
And you have to look at Microsoft pushing Windows 8 on ARM with Windows RT. Intel is starting to get squeezed because consumers want portable, low-power devices with great battery life. That's really what they want. They want it not just in their tablets and their phones, but they really would like it in their laptops as well. The next Intel talk, and this also came from an article I just read by on GigaOM about the tick-tock pattern. Intel has a, you know, the tick is a process improvement. They get it down to a smaller die size, for instance. And the tock is an improvement in the actual chip design. And tock is coming in June with Haswell, but more importantly, the low-power Haswells. We're not sure where they're going to come. I asked Ryan Schrout on Twit, but sometime this year, certainly, maybe as soon as September, we'll see Haswell U parts, which are these ultra-low-power parts that can give a laptop the performance of a laptop with the power curve of an iPad, so that you've got 20 hours, 10 hours, whatever.
Well, and I think one of the things that's happened is that over the last couple of years, probably the last 2 or 3 years, we've gotten to a point where the average consumer doesn't really notice the performance changes anymore. I mean, I think we used to
They're
notice
fast
it.
Oh, enough. It was fast.
It's gotten to a point where it plays the video back well and it does all the other pieces, and unless you're a power user, you're not going to notice. And power users, we'd like to think that we were 50% of the population and we're about 2. You know, and so
what you want in a laptop isn't what you want in a laptop. Well, you do want more power in terms of the graphics.
We buy these Retinas because of the power.
By the way, Haswell has a much faster motherboard GPU, much faster, yep. Like 4 times faster.
Boot.
It is low power. This Retina might now get 8, 10 hours,
right.
Be faster. A MacBook Air even more. I mean, Renee, are you hearing any rumors about this kind of thing? Do you think people should look at this price drop and say, yeah, now's the time to buy a MacBook, or maybe wait?
I have a canned answer for this. My canned answer is always, if you absolutely need it, then buy it now and be happy with it. But if you don't absolutely need it today, then wait as long as you can.
Of course.
Because that's the way to always be something better.
But that's always true. I think this is a little bit different because we've got a talk coming very soon.
Yes. Yeah, if you can wait, and you know, Apple did a lot of revisions at WWDC and the rest of them in the fall, and we got a slight processor bump now, but you have to expect, I don't think we'll see a Retina MacBook Air or anything crazy like that, but I think you'll definitely see those new. I mean, as much as Apple is mysterious, they are bound to the cycles of their component manufacturers, so no LTE until the right Qualcomm chip comes out, no better graphics for the Retina display until the new Intel on-die processor comes out. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you can wait, they'll be much better machines, and they'll probably cost you the same, if not less, eventually.
And not wait that long. I mean, Haswell comes out in June. Usually Apple, within a month or so of a new Intel chip releases new hardware, right? Apple's one of the fastest to adopt new Intel hardware. At least they have been in the past.
Yeah, I almost always recommend that people not buy a new laptop until there's something physically you cannot do with your old one.
Right.
And I'm not talking about, gosh, Photoshop seems to be running a little bit slow. I'm talking about you want a new connector, and unfortunately this does not have the new type of connector. Your current one doesn't have the new type of connector you want. It doesn't have USB 3.0. Or, you know, you spilled like 1/4 of a cup of Diet Coke on your laptop keyboard, and now the trackpad doesn't work anymore. And after 8 months, you feel as though you've done enough penance for having been falling asleep on an Amtrak train, holding a cup of Coke in your hand with your laptop open, and now you're
asking for a friend.
But what if you could double battery life, for instance, or at least 50% increase? That might be a good reason.
If you're the kind of person that's spending a lot of time away from being.
Oh, man, I would love an Air. Well, okay, this is what I want. A Retina Air with 10 hours battery life. Wouldn't you want that?
Oh, of course.
13-inch Retina Air with battery life?
Yeah, absolutely.
What if you could get that in September? Would you buy an Air today?
You're asking the wrong person.
Of course you would.
He'll buy
it.
I just want to bring this up. You know, to me, I was thinking, I did just buy a new iMac, the new iMac, and I love it. It's very nice. I like the Fusion Drive and highly recommend it. I think that's a great technology. But I've been thinking about, you know, is it time to upgrade the Airs? They're getting a couple of years old now. And I think it's time to wait.
Some people think you shouldn't buy the first generation when the new stuff comes out anyway. Like the first Air is nowhere nearly as good as the third generation Air was. And the first Retina MacBook's not going to be as good as the beefier on die CPU. So
I have a bigger problem with I tend to have a prejudice that whenever Apple comes up with a marvelous new manufacturing technique, I don't think they're going to really figure out how to make 5 million of these until they've shipped 5 million of these, and we get back all this information about how well these things are doing. So anytime there's a radically new chassis design, that usually is my personal cue to hold off for at least a few months until you find out what's happening with this first generation stuff.
I have the ghosting on my Retina Mac, on my Retina MacBook. Whenever I go to Daring Fireball, for example, I see whatever past windows have been on my screen.
Ooh.
And that's fairly common. Yeah. So I mean, that they'll probably. I think the new one that they just bumped fixes that. So it always behooves you to wait if you're not a giant geek who has to buy everything immediately.
I have a bad pixel. It just happened. It's driving me absolutely crazy. Every time I turn on my computer now, I stare at it.
Have you sometimes you can rub it out.
I tried.
Yeah.
No rubbing his...
New TV ads for the iPad, and this one features apps. Boy, you would love, if you're an app developer, wouldn't you love to be the the app featured in an Apple ad? Let's take a look.
I'm not getting your audio, but...
You know whose app that was, by the way? You're not getting my audio?
No.
I hate this. I hate it! Let's try it again. I'm going to plug it in again. Now, audio's coming out of it, but now it should be going to you. Is it you're getting the buzzy thing or you're getting the...
I'm not getting anything.
Yeah, well, you'll get it. Now you're not getting anything? I just want to point out that first app is Clayton Morris's app. But yeah. I don't know if they say... I don't think they give him credit. Go ahead. You play it. It's apple.com. They say the this link right there.
They're almost like Blipfords. They go so fast.
And I think that there's somewhere there.
It's called Quick Read, and it's a speed reading app. And I don't know if they, that's what that is.
Yeah, it's a great app.
There we go. Is that me? So they're not saying names of any of these.
There is somewhere there's a guide. I think even Apple has it all the apps that are being used in their ads. Together.
It's a good ad. Ooh, air hockey. So I think that's a nod to Quick Read, which is Clayton Morris's one word at a time speed reading app.
There's a second ad, too.
Play Alive. Play the second one, if you would, Chad. Ooh, synthesizers. Ooh, ears. Ooh, models. Ooh, drums. Deep. Ooh, something. Something else. Now we're looking at a Titanic. Alive! Sharks. It's Shark Week. Exercise. Never mind. There's my heart pounding on a snowboard. Nice ad. I like that ad.
It's a good change of pace.
There's also subliminal messaging in there as those words whiz by.
Yeah,
it's funner. It's more like an iPod ad. It's a more of a mainstream. You don't have Peter Coyote lecturing you anymore. Now you just get to enjoy yourself.
And it is the ultimate response to any decision to buy an Android tablet, isn't it? I mean, fine. freeze frame this on anything and try to find something half as good as the on the Google Play Store.
It's pretty,
and it's read quick. Not quick read.
Not quick read? Well, I was reading it so quickly, I got it reversed. Yeah. Read quick. See, Natalie's going to kill me no matter what. So I love Jackie Chang. God bless her. Ars Technica's Apple columnist. She writes the Infinite Loop column at Ars Technica, which is consistently one of the best news sources on the web. I actually pay for Ars Technica Premier, I guess they call it. So we remember we fell for this story. Everybody fell for this story. Or I don't know if fall for it's the right word, but everybody was saying it. It was in that new book, Inside Apple. It was, Adam Leshinsky's book. It was a lot of different sources and certainly all the news sources. And we mentioned it, said that when you get hired at Apple, you might be, as an engineer, you might be assigned to a fake project for a few months to see if you leak. And you know, given what you've told me, Alex, about the paranoia level at Apple, I kind of believed it.
Well, there was paranoia. I think there's a lot less now than there was.
She has searched and searched, talked to everybody, inside people, and universally, she has not found any evidence of this. And if you think about it, given the shortage of engineers and resources, it would be very, very wasteful to sign somebody good to a fake project.
Yeah, this is Apple is one of the problems with Apple's success is that they've become more of like a Willy Wonka style legend.
Yes. Yes.
Because you can start almost any rumor that maybe 10% of you thinks makes kind of sense, and the more you think about it, the more sense it'll seem to make. And I mean, I didn't buy this from the start. Although I have to admit, the part of me said that, well, is Apple paranoid? Yes, they are. Do they get really, really steamed when information gets out that they don't want out at the time when they went out? Yes, they do. I think it was Louis C.K. Somebody made a joke about it was on the Bugle podcast saying that about the awful rumors that people were spreading about like Hillary Clinton saying that now I know that she has never murdered somebody, but I cannot.
I
cannot say with 100% certainty that I don't believe that she would never murder somebody.
It's just another way of saying, when did you stop beating your wife, right?
I didn't believe that Apple hires people and puts them on fake projects. Yeah. I don't believe that at no point has there been a meeting somewhere where they suggested this and someone said, ooh, as soon as we get the Apple Watch done and the hoverboard, then.
But it is... You know, Adam Leshinsky actually, when Jackie asked him, said, well, I never said that. It was dummy projects. That is projects that, you know, when you first get hired, we don't know what you're going to assign you to. But Daniel Jalkut says who does Red Sweater Software, is a longtime Apple developer. He's never heard of anybody intentionally wasting engineers' times on a fake project. So I apologize. I did repeat the story. But, you know, it's a juicy story. And it really is a juicy story because it sounds like something Apple might do.
Yeah, right? It fits into your picture of Apple.
Right.
Yeah,
as Andy says.
There's a difference also in how this stuff gets translated from what someone might or might not hear.
Right.
Don Melton also, who created WebKit and Safari for Apple, came out after the story and said he'd never heard it either. And yeah. I've never heard that. And it doesn't make sense from an engineering point of view. And it seems like a ridiculous story. But that's not to say that they're a skunk where, you know, a guy comes in for an internship. They give him, here's this crazy project, try and get this to work. And he spends some time doing it and they decide whether they should go forward with it or not. And if they don't go forward with it, it gets canceled. He gets moved on to something else. But you do hear rumors about canary traps or people are told things. They don't waste engineering time on it, but they're told things, right, specifications.
I think they mentioned that in the Steve Jobs book, the Isaacson Jobs book, that different executives were told different things. And then when it leaked, they were fired, depending on who was the leak.
I heard they were all fired.
Oh, my, no, wait, but that was Game of I saw that on Game of Thrones. Never mind. That was a different.
But even the stuff about, you know, like CIA and former FBI agents locking down the room and dragging people out, the Apple people who responded to the story said, you know, we've never seen that.
Yeah. So I just wanted to mention
I think that's from The Firm in the movie.
Yeah. We're going to find out who Jeff was. And I say was because he clearly isn't. And I'm talking about the Jeff right behind Andy over his left shoulder. We're also going to talk about what Tim Cook said about Apple stores and some very amazing stats made into graphs by Horace Dedeu at Asimco, and why that would explain why maybe Google, as well as Microsoft and Samsung, is opening stores. But first, a word about our phone system. Now, see, when I say that, that sounds like, oh, who wants to talk about a phone system? Let me tell you, there's some pretty cool stuff going on here. When we moved to the Brickhouse Studios, we knew we needed a phone system. I realized... When did you decide for the Pixel Cord that you were going to get a phone? You don't have a phone system.
No, we have Ring Central.
You have Ring Central.
Yeah, yeah. We got it like a month or two ago.
Oh, you just got it.
Oh, yeah. For a long time, we were just like all on cell phones.
Right.
We like,
when you're small, you make your employees use their personal phones. And I realized, I just didn't feel I couldn't do that. Plus, you need a central company number. You need a phone tree. We have a directory. You enter the first few letters, and it finds a personal. As you get bigger, you kind of need to do this. But the last thing I wanted to do was go to AT&T across the street and say, we need a PBX in the basement, and we got to lease it and blah, blah, blah. And so the first we heard about RingCentral was from Russell, our IT guy, who said he'd installed it. So did you hear about it from us? And that's why you'd installed it?
So the funny thing is we knew you were doing something, but we were at a Salesforce event and they were there. And so we talked to them and
they're
great. It was completely separate. And they're great. And the big thing is flexibility. It's not just that it's another phone system. It's the fact that I can route that phone number to my iPhone, or I can route it to my Android phone, or I can,
Have you started using the business text yet?
I haven't yet.
So now they have SMS. So you have a RingCentral app on your iPhone or Android phone. Mm-hmm. You make calls from that. The company pays for the call, plus the company number shows up as the incoming number.
Right.
But you can also use it for text messaging. So you're text messaging from the company's 800 number. And inbound text messages to the 800 number go to your phone.
Right.
So that is really interesting. And I think what that shows is a lot of companies are starting to use text messaging as a way of communicating. As little as $20 a month per user. And that includes unlimited long-distance calling to anywhere in the U.S. You get, as you said, all sorts of features. Faxes come to your inbox, voicemail.
And again, the flexibility is so important. Being able to reroute all of those pieces, because we have people spread out all over the world and being able to...
So you don't just use it in this office. It's basically your phone system, your kind of virtual phone system for a virtual company. That makes a lot of sense, actually. I want you to visit ringcentral.com. Read all about it. We have a special number for our listeners. Don't call the number on the RingCentral page. Call 800-543-9980, 800-543-9980, or go to ringcentral.com and use the offer code TWIT. Either way, they'll know it's from us. 800-543-9980. You can try it for a month, and they do have a special deal for our listeners. When you buy a phone, you get a second phone free up to a total of 20 phones. So you really got a kind of an instant start. RingCentral's fantastic, and I think the fact that Alex is using it too kind of speaks for itself. RingCentral.com. All right. Tim Cook was speaking at, was it the Bloomberg conference?
Goldman Sachs.
That's what I mean. I always say Bloomberg, Goldman Sachs conference. And he talked about the stores. He said, there's no better place to discover, explore, and learn about our products than in retail. And that's, of course, the reason I think Apple did retail. It's the retail experience where you walk in and you instantly realize this store is not here for the purpose of selling. It's here for the purpose of serving. I think that's accurate. When you go in an Apple store, you don't feel like somebody's trying to sell you something. It's like, we've got it all. What do you want? What can we do? What can we help you with? I'm not even sure he said the store is the right word anymore. They've taken on a role much broader than that. They are the face of Apple for almost all of our customers. 120 million people in the stores last quarter.
That is a crazy number.
120 million.
He also
called
them his Prozac.
What? He did?
He said that when he's depressed, he goes to an Apple store and it's like taking a Prozac.
I think it's the other way around. It's quite stimulant. It's like a Benny. Especially most Apple stores are so crowded and they're popping and they're happening.
And everybody knows you.
Well, they don't know me, but they don't know you when you walk in. They say, Alex Lindsay!
I usually know.
That's
nice. Meet a couple people.
That's nice. 400 stores.
Alex goes to feel like Steve Allen.
400 stores, 370 million visitors in a year. So that's like almost a million people per store. Look at the graph of people in the store. Store visitors versus store open. The line is store visitors. Average store is open.
Well, and so much of the store is about all of the stuff. It's exactly what he said. It's all about the services. I mean, because a lot of times you go into the store because something needs to be fixed, or you don't understand why something isn't working, or you want to go, you know, and the key is you have people there that aren't driven by bonuses. They aren't, they are driven by making sure that they answer your questions. They are knowledgeable. They're, you know, it's a very specialized crew. I just don't know. I can't think of another retail outlet like that.
The best number is the amount of sales per square foot.
$6,000
per square foot in 2012. That makes Apple more successful by a factor of two than Tiffany.
The second place.
The number two factor is Tiffany, and it's 3,000. Lululemon, Coach.
What's Lululemon?
It's doesn't your wife work out? It is a girls' athletic store, women's athletic store. Okay. You don't know Lululemon? It's Canadian.
I'm not a girl.
I'm sure Renee knows Lululemon.
And they have men's apparel too, Leo.
They do?
Yep.
They wouldn't be caught dead wearing something that says Lululemon. Athletica. That's the other part of the brand. Maybe I'll wear an Athletica shirt. Coach, Michael Kors. All right, there's Lululemon. All right. You're right. There's men, women. They sell, he looks manly. I'm not wearing baby blue workout shorts. I'm sorry. That's just not fair.
Because you're not as secure in your
I'm not secure.
As this gentleman
no, I'm
is.
Not. I'm not. I don't want anybody to look at me and say, what the hell are you wearing? There you go.
Well, it is, look at this graph. It is kind of scary when you realize that Tiffany can learn something about markup from
and one of the things, though, like when you look at it, so I've tried to buy phones at different places, you know, for whatever convenience. I bought, you know, iPhones at a Verizon store, an AT&T store, and I've gotten to the point now where I will not. I just go to the Apple store to buy it because my Apple Care is instantly added to my system. I don't have to take a box home and try to figure it out. I don't have to, you know, and I've just stopped ordering. The only thing we ever order outside of the Apple store that's an Apple product is really high-end laptops, because if we need them that day, we can get them from B&H. They're pre-built. But in Apple, you know, it takes 3 days or whatever if we're in a rush. So, but outside of that, we buy everything, you know, that's Apple from Apple. And I think that's because the service is so much higher when you do it. It's just so much easier. The process.
I always buy online. But
from Apple.
But always from Apple.
Yeah. I bought it from Amazon. I got like the last version of that hardware, and then the Apple Care didn't get.
Well, and also Apple's smart. They control the pricing so well. There's no advantage to buying from Amazon.
Yeah.
You don't save. You save $5 or something. It's not worth.
And in the store, they'll teach you how to use it. I mean, they'll set it up for you. They'll give you classes on the basic software all for free. It's almost like going on a cruise ship of retail.
Now,
without the feces and urine.
The getting support could be a little frustrating because at this point you must make an appointment to get support. You cannot walk in and say, I need help. You actually they'll say, well, when's your appointment? You have to make an appointment.
You can walk in, but they'll try to help you make an appointment.
Yeah, that's what you'll do is you'll make an appointment and then sit around for a while.
That's not a surprise to anybody. I mean, remember what the situation was when they first opened these stores, where you could not get a working demo of a Mac in any of the stores where they were available,
right?
Because you walk in the store and the Mac screens are all dim, all the window screens are active or at least showing a blue screen, at least showing that at least the CPU was actually working, you know. And they needed to do. I think that originally from the get go, this was conceived as we're going to build embassies for the Apple nation inside every mall, inside every major town square. We're going to make sure there's a place where someone wants to see why a functional Apple anything and why it's such a good thing to buy. That's where they go. And what's amazing is that even as Apple has worked its way up out of that abyss, that it still does function that way, that you go there and these are places where people play. I mean, there's a Microsoft store in the Prudential Center in Boston, which is roughly across the street from the landmark Apple store in Boylston Street. And to its credit, the Microsoft store, it's usually quite busy. The Prudential Center is a very, very busy downtown mall. But when you go into the Apple store, you see people just sort of hanging out and you see kids like playing. And it really does have that sort of town square sort of vibe to it. It's not a place of transactions. So it's quite an achievement. And any history of Apple has to put the Apple stores, I would say, in the top six of accomplishments that the company has done in the entire history.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that it is not only is the service really good, but the it's so frictionless. You know, I mean, you know, a good example. I mean, so B&H, we buy more stuff from B&H than we buy from Apple, and which is hard to believe. And I spend a lot of time there when I'm in New York. And
they're like a camera and audio company.
The camera, yeah, they do video and gear, and you know,
but they're more like a warehouse, right? You go in there and it's just crazy products.
It's the one place in the world that you can just kind of walk in and grab the kind of equipment that we use.
Right.
And so when we're in New York, a lot of times we develop new pipelines and everything else because we can't just walk into B&H. But the thing is, B&H, though, you have to brace for impact because you're going to go there and you're going to talk to one guy. And they really know what they're talking about. But then they're going to give you a slip and then you're going to take it over to another guy. And then he's going to take that slip and he's going to put it into the computer. And then he's going to wait for all the stuff to show up to him. And then he's going to send that to another person's on the slip. And there's like a half an hour that it takes to buy anything there. Now, the place is packed, so whatever they're doing is working. But you do that, and then you walk over to the Apple Store. You take the subway down to the Apple Store in Chelsea, and you don't even talk to anyone. You take your iPhone, and you take pictures of your you scan. You know, have you done this with the Apple Store app?
No.
You walk up, and you just you take the item.
And you say, this one's mine.
And then you scan it, and you charge it, and then
it's
you walk
done.
Out.
And you walk out
like
with it.
Yeah. I feel like you're
– It's like shoplifting.
It feels like shoplifting.
I can't do it.
But it's so exciting.
It's a little bit too low key though. I bought my last MacBook in the Boylston Street Apple Store, and it's like, all right. And it's not like I was expecting to be like sat down and handed tea and a couple of high end biscuits because I'm making a major purchase. But it's like I'm gonna walk out. I'm gonna drop $2,000 here, and it was like, okay, great. Here you go. Do you want the better display or the okay display? The okay. Okay. Here you go.
There's a message that I think there's an unconscious intentional message there that $2,000 is no big deal. Right? Like, yeah, that's fine. What else would you like
probably,
to buy? We don't need your money.
Don't know that I'm a working journalist.
Yeah, we don't need your money. Just,
well, most importantly,
if you want
that
to give us money, we'll take it.
That salesperson doesn't need your money. They're getting paid where they're getting paid, no matter what. And it's really funny because, like, because I try to buy the stuff on my own just because I'm fascinated by the process. And if you slow down at all, someone walks over and goes, "Hey, do you need a hand?" You know, like, you know, it's like they're not paying attention to you until you look like you're having trouble anyway. Yeah. So it's
and they're also, I mean, their job is to delight you, and they're given, especially the geniuses, have a wide range of latitude, and you'll see people.
They're really good at opening boxes. Stuff. By the way, you know, all the Apple boxes, they'll show you all the secrets to how to open those boxes if you ask them, like, if you open it in the store.
And you always see at least four or five of them trying to figure out how to get your data off that old Windows laptop or PC and move it on to your new one for you, or looking at that scratch on your iPhone and trying to see if your Apple Care can somehow cover it for you. I mean, they do a lot of good work.
Anyway, I mean, and I know, you know, we're definitely going into the fanboy zone here but this is why they're making so much money. If you're wondering why, I mean, I think it's going to be hard. I think it's very hard to create that culture. I think, you know, Google's going to try it, Microsoft's going to try it, but I think it's very, very difficult to create that culture again. And I
walk into Best Buy and there's nobody there. I go there and every section is empty. I find one guy says, "Not my section." He runs off, and then they don't have any customers, so they cut the staff further.
Right.
Right.
It's a vicious cycle.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that's why I think that the Microsoft stores, they've got the best shot. But even there, what they don't understand is that Apple has always been a community of people who have been attracted to specifically this brand and specifically those features. And so if you erect a clubhouse, then, you know, people are going to come and go see that. Whereas Google doesn't have that sort of aura around it. I think everything will change once they have Google Glass actually shipping. And
I think that's why they're building Google stores. Is really, it's all about demoing Glass more than anything.
And so, just as Java is associated with browser exploits, I think that Google Glass is going to be associated with conjunctivitis. But definitely bring your alcohol wipes once if you want to demo those at the store. But I mean, is there the same sort of user community that says that I was here to buy a pair of slacks at JCPenney's because I'm that much of an Apple fan. I'm just going to stop by the Apple Store just to see what's doing because I've got another 45 minutes on my parking. I'm not sure the people are going to do that for a Microsoft store or a Google store.
Are there Google fanboys or are there Samsung fanboys? It's a much more fractured market.
I'm a Google fanboy. I'll admit it.
Well, they don't historically have consumer-facing products,
tattoo,
so a lot of their...
Come on, show us the tattoo.
No, I don't have a tattoo.
I know you only have got it outlined. You don't have the shading in yet. But
I'm waiting. Who is Jeff? And what happened to Jeff? The guy over your left shoulder. Andy.
Oh, Jeff.
The guy behind you.
I can't believe you don't recognize Jeff Peterson.
Oh,
The co-host of the Late Late Show with with Craig Ferguson.
Oh, that's who that is.
Yeah, that is his robot skeleton sidekick.
I love Craig Ferguson, but he's on too late. If it were just the Late Show, I could watch it, but the Late Late Show, I can't.
VR.
He is the animatronic human skeleton that serves as a sidekick I think Craig Ferguson is actually doing some of the most innovative stuff ever. I love him.
Well, see, that's why, without getting into too deep a rat hole, this is why I love like what happened with Jeff Peterson. Originally, this is supposed to be a limited gag, which I'm working on hopefully an article about Jeff and his construction. Jeff is actually driven by an iPad.
You're kidding.
The person who does the voice is off camera and within line of sight of the host, so that he can actually have conversations.
But it was built by Grant Imahara from the MythBusters.
Built by Grant Imahara, runs off of two APC UPSs.
Wow!
But what I love about it is that originally he was designed to be programmed with like six like banal like catchphrases, saying in your pants, so that to sort of make a joke about how like sidekicks, they're just there to like trigger catchphrases and not really do anything. But unfortunately, They had the voice guy actually on set for a couple of weeks, and they had so much fun that, okay, I guess the sidekick really makes a valuable contribution to the show. All right, fine. You're still not getting on camera. Still going to be the robot.
Oh, well, okay. I feel bad that I didn't know who it was.
Ever. That's my favorite iPad accessory.
Because I am a fan, but I just haven't seen the show very often. So that's good to know. All right. Interesting article in the New York Times about the Lightning cable. Brian X. Chen writing on Valentine's Day. The reason I was interested is because I keep waiting for Mophie to do a Mophie case for the iPhone 5, and it's taken a long, long time. It just came out, by the way. Yeah. And that's the context of this, is that Apple really tightly controls accessories now because of this new Lightning connector. You have to get a license for it. And in fact, the connectors are serialized. So they know, and there's authentication chips, but also a serial number. So they know whose accessory it is.
Well, and they have, Apple has a lot more power to tighten that down because it's programmable. So
right.
Any update to iPhone, if they decide they want to change everything,
they can screw you.
They can. So, you know, this is definitely not one of those places like to buy something that's off brand. You know, your Lightning connectors, you know, that's not going to last to the next. So that's the thing to watch out for. Now, Monoprice, I guess, is actually, and I think Amazon both have.
They're charging, though. I don't think that they do all the capabilities of a Lightning cable. They're essentially charging cables. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's that. So be careful when you buy a cheap Lightning cable.
But I think that they are licensed. I think that they're licensed.
Are they licensed?
No. I think that the I believe I saw that Monoprice does have a license.
All right. Well, if it's licensed, that's fine. I don't know if is there a badge? Is there some sort of Apple approval
There's
badge?
A program you have to join. And
yeah, the MFI.
It makes the NDA for the software stuff look timid by comparison.
So anyway, the good news is there finally is a Mophie for the iPhone 5. It's called the Juice Pack Helium. Comes out March 1st. It's a 1,500 milliamp hours, so it probably doubles the life of the iPhone 5. Much needed, I got to say.
I've been using it all week.
Have you? You like it?
Yeah. I like it. It's a little bit more soft touch than the previous one, which I don't like as much. So it feels almost velvety.
Good. It looks smaller, too. The other one was huge.
How many milliamps?
It is smaller. I don't know if it's a problem, but the biggest change is because the headphone jack is at the bottom. They now have a very deep hole for the headphone, and it comes with an extension in case your headphone won't fit in that hole.
I have that problem with a lot of cases. I can't get my headphones in there.
Yeah.
So they have a little adapter.
For the iPhone 1.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, good news. Well, good. I'll let you give us a review when you're done reviewing that for iMore. Let's see. A couple of quick stories, and we're going to get to our picks of the week. McAfee revokes the key for signing Mac apps. Whoops. I guess it's fixed now. Apple loses his Brazilian iPhone trademark ruling. Johnny Ive gets a gold Blue Peter badge.
I had to go start looking that up because that was such a
it's a BBC program, right?
It's like Captain Kangaroo or Mr. Rogers. It's beloved by people of a certain age in England,
right? Well, and they give badges to like the listeners for achieving certain things, and there's rewards for doing certain positive things to the show. And it's such a widespread tradition that there are like museums and places where if you have earned your badge, you can flash this badge and get free admission to certain things. It became such a big deal that People were selling their blue Peter Padges on eBay because they became really, really valuable. So now there's like a – now they had to create a brand new system created by one of the kids who watches the program, who was awarded the silver blue Peter badge for for her efforts. That requires a photo ID to accompany that badge in order to work. So apparently it is a – it is the gold badges are only given to like – huge dignitaries, big, big deal people.
The queen has one. For instance.
Yeah. So whenever she purchases at least a two scoop ice cream, she gets a free topping of choice by flashing her gold badge.
In the U.S., MCal 27 says, you don't know about Blue Peter? No, we never heard of that in the U.S. That's an English.
We have Mr. Rogers.
We have Mr. Rogers.
Johnny, I bet they never heard of the Radio Shack Battery of the Month Club card either. You know, there are these cross-cultural things.
It's just cross-cultural. David Beckham's got one. Barney, J.K. Rowling, and the Queen. That's neat. That's neat. And Johnny Ive said, I grew up watching Blue Peter.
Yeah.
He says he vividly remembers designs from the show and loved it that they reused products he thought were no longer useful.
That really is the gift for the person who's got everything.
A Blue Peter. I had a Blue Peter once, but I saw a doctor. And let's see. I think we're going to take a break and come back and get your picks of the week, gentlemen.
Oh, there was iOS 6.1.2, Leo.
Yeah, I said we were going to talk about it. Now, this fixes the Exchange error. Does it fix the very nasty lock screen error?
No, I couldn't get it to work eventually, and neither could Christina Warren or Matthew Panzerino from other outlets. But Ars Technica managed to get the exploit working again, so it doesn't appear to be fixed.
Oh, that's too bad. This is an exploit that came in iOS 4.2 that allowed somebody to bypass your lock screen. Can you access all the contents of the phone, or can you just get to the dialer?
You can do limited things. You can get to limited forms of contacts and some other information, but I don't believe it gives you full, unfettered access to the phone.
And that's good news because it means evasion still works.
Yeah, evasion still works, and it's also... and that exploit is rather complicated. I mean, I think it took Christina 10 tries to get it working, and I still haven't gotten it working, but, you know, respected outlets have got it working.
I think if you practiced...
It's harder than the Konami code.
Okay. It's not up, up, down, down, up, left, right, left, right.
And you need physical access and, you know, yada, yada.
Yada, yada, yada. But that's the thing. If you leave it on a bar and you go to the bathroom, somebody could, if they got adept at it, could call
it. Could tweet something nasty.
Yeah, hang up. Yeah.
But the Exchange bug was annoying a lot of people, and Microsoft was working around it, so it's nice that's fixed.
That's good, yeah. That's 6.12. Is this Christina doing it? No,
this is The Verge.
The Voyage doing it.
But you have to, hit cancel, then hit home, then type in a certain number, then hit call, then disconnect it, then lock, and then unlock. I mean,
If you know it, you could probably get it done pretty quick, right?
Yeah.
It's finicky, though. I mean, it takes several tries.
Timing usually is critical. And
yeah.
Boy, this is quite a...
There you go.
Now you got the contacts, you got the dialer. But the thing that's weird is that this bug was in 4.2 and fixed, and now it resurfaced. So it's like somebody in the chat room said, Scott Forstall checked it back in from the...
But it's like the Exchange bug has happened. There's these parts of code where they fix bugs, but they're kind of all leaning up against each other. Right. And then if you change one other thing, comes back.
House of cards.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, well, I was going to mention that. So you certainly should update your phone. Is it all iPhones? Is it okay?
It's all of them. The last one was just iPhone 4S. And there is a beta for 6.1.1, which is probably going to get renumbered now to 6.1.3.
Yeah, because they're at 6.1.2.
Yeah.
Very confusing. All right. Our show today brought to you by Audible.com. We love Audible. I just, you know, I love my days off. Monday's a day off for me. I fire up the Sonos. I put Audible on all my speakers in my house. I do the laundry, and I'm listening to my audiobooks. And it's like, I don't care how long the chores take. They could take all day, because I'm listening to the second book of Peter Rothfuss's Kingkiller Chronicles. And I'm in that world, and it's just great. You don't know you're doing chores, or you're exercising, or you're driving your horrible commute. Your life just is better because of Audible.com. I want you to try Audible.com. If you go to audible.com/MacBreak, you can sign up for the Gold account. Your first month's free. Your first book is free. You can cancel any time in the first 30 days, but keep the book forever. Costs nothing. I don't think you will cancel because I think you're going to love it. Now, the key is to get that first book to have it be something really great. And Andy, as always, Andy, I listen to every book you recommend, Andy. You have never steered me wrong. So here's a chance for you to recommend another book.
This is the second volume of Carl Reiner's autobiography slash memoirs, I Remember Me. His first one was Enter Laughing, and that was the a comedian, writer, someone of his legendary stature writes the first memoir. Yeah, that's the story of conceiving of and creating and writing the Dick Van Dyke Show. So all the most frequent highlights you'd get out of Carl Reiner's career were covered in the first one. This was like that was his perspective, like as a young old man. Now he is 90, 91 years old, and the second volume of the memoir is mostly, well, I lost my wife a few years ago. Here's how that works. Here are the things that I'm really kind of focusing on in my older age. But it's still so if you have purchased neither one of them, then I think that Enter Laughing is the one to go for. If you have already seen the first one, then the I Remember Me. I've bought it. I've skimmed it in an actual bookstore, and the first couple chapters really stuck with me. So that became. I haven't listened to the audiobook version yet, but he's a great reader, great performer. One of these guys that, man, if you could be 1/10 as creative as this person in 1/2 of his lifetime, they'll bury you with a smile on his face, because he is just one of those brains that just keeps creating, keeps working, and keeps operating on such a high level that he has my utmost admiration. He received one of these awards from me, where the fact that he has a new book out means that I am purchasing that book in audiobook form.
You know, it's funny, once you buy that book, then or look at that book, then you start getting all the other Hollywood memoirs as recommendations. People who bought this also bought Dick Van Dyke's memoirs, My Lucky Life. Dick Cavett's memoirs, Talk Show. Yeah, I mean, so that's one of the fun things about this. And very often, you know, Carl Reiner narrates his... Most of the time, I don't like authors to narrate their own books. But when it's a showbiz celebrity, you want to hear their voice. So,
yeah, and also, I mean, these previews are really important, because I bought, there's another book that I actually bought and started listening to last week, but kind of had to abort after the second or third chapter.
Because the reader was...
Because the reader was almost as if he's trying to explain to you where you can pick up your luggage after your plane has landed.
Generally, Audible's very good. They hire actors, Broadway actors. Did you recommend Michael Caine's book, The Elephant to Hollywood?
Yes.
Because just having Michael Caine narrate a book is a good example of that's you want to hear that.
Was a bird and a bottle party. You can either bring a bottle or a bird. Well, I couldn't afford a bottle, so I brought two birds.
I want to go to a bird in a bottle party. So audible.com/MacBreak. The problem, as you can already see, is you're going to see 100 books you want to listen to. I got to tell you, this is going to change your life, especially if you spend time in the car, commuting, at the gym, working out, doing housework, walking the dog. I listen to Audible whenever I can. I've got it running the Audible app on my iPhone, my Android phone. They've got BlackBerry and Windows Phone, too. They even have a Metro app if you're a Windows 8 user. audible.com/MacBreak. Give it a try.
I bought 5 books the other day.
Chad just got it. He's become an Audible guy.
Just say no to unitasking.
What did you buy?
Here, let me go into my library. I bought...
Chad's turning into one of us.
Yeah.
Welcome to our world, Chad. Bad influence.
So I bought In the Plex, I'm Feeling Lucky.
Awesome.
Ghost in the Wires.
Great stuff.
Pandora's Star.
Oh.
Civilization, which, and then the second book in the King Killer Chronicles.
Yeah. See, Chad, what's happening is this is a college education for you.
Oh, yeah.
I learned so much more from Audible books over the last 10, 15 years that I've been a member. It's an ongoing education.
Yeah.
So I like it that you're mixing fiction with nonfiction. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
You're going to love the Peter F. Hamblin. Have you listened to any of his stuff before?
I haven't. That was suggested to me. I really like the sort of cyberpunk sort of stuff. So
yeah, his characterizations. He's a great writer, which makes his books especially good. You got to listen to the Dragon one, Falling Dragon, Fall Dragon, Falling Dragon. I'll find it for you. Anyway, enough. We could go on and on. As you can see, we're kind of fans. Audible.com/MacBreak. Now, time for our picks of the week. Let's start all the way to the right with Renee Ritchie.
Before my pick, Leo, I ran and slapped on the Mophie
there it is,
just to show you.
So it is roughly the same thickness as the old Mophie case. It looks similar.
Yeah, the only weird thing is because the iPhone 5 is so light, you can feel the difference more, but it works really well. It recharges, and it's got the.
He just popped. That was always the problem with the Mophie cases, popping the bottom off. Now that's weird because the light is on the bottom. It's got lightning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Fallen Dragon. That's the name of it. Thank you, John. So there's the Mophie. That's called the Helium. Available March 1st, $79 in the U.S.
The dark one is available now. The light one comes out later.
Oh, good.
I believe
it's
now, or around about now-ish.
Okay, great.
But my pick is actually something completely different. It's called Search Path, and it's a new tool, a web service from Manton Reese, who's well-known for TweetMark or Watermark. And he also has a tool that you can use, Tweet Library, which I used for my Twitter archive. But SearchPath is a new service. It's $8 a month if you want to use it. And it puts a very elegant, very small search box onto any web page. It'll work as a backup for your website as well. You put it on, you type in a search term. The demo only does Peter Pan, but it'll show you what happens. And everything comes up in a popover, so you don't lose the context of your site when you're demoing it.
Oh, I like this.
He also, he and Daniel Jalkut do the... Core Intuition podcast, where he spoke about it on this week's episode, which is a very interesting show too. And it just it gets out of your way. It does what it says it's going to do, and it works very well.
I'm going to put this on Leoville, and if we like it, maybe we should use it on Twit. We use Google search right now on Twit. Oop, we broke it. I should have done it before. Before you mentioned it.
I'm sorry, Manton.
I'm sure it'll come back any minute now. Searchpath.io.
Yes.
Are you using it on iMore?
I don't. We still use Google on iMore. We'll probably roll our own custom thing eventually just because we want full page search results. But I'm going to put this most likely on my personal site when I redo it, because then I want people to still be able to see the content, you know, when they're searching for stuff.
This is really good. I'm very intrigued. $8 a month,
yeah.
But you can try it for free. Mr. Alex Lindsay, you've pulled out something that we played with on...
Did you already play with this?
On iPad today, yeah. Have you ever ordered... Well, go ahead, show it.
So this is... Autodesk keeps on putting out just these great
fun
consumer
stuff.
Apps. Yeah. So they have... 1-2-3D Catch and a variety of other pieces of software, and they're just really moving into this market. And so the new one here is 1-2-3D Creature, and so you basically start with a you can start with a skeleton, and once you have that skeleton, you can move it around, you can start adding to it, so you can really build this entire object. Do you have an overhead of mine?
No. I don't know. Do you, Chad? Right, there it is. There's something. Whoa. Hey. Right.
Sorry,
there.
That's the best I got.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. It works.
We'll take it.
So here you can see this little skeleton, and I can add, you know, I can add parts to his legs. I can then move his legs around. So you can see how you can start to, you know, play around with, you know, exactly how this, you know, so you're building basically this creature, and then you go, okay, I want to bake that skeleton. And it's going to. Spraying biogel. I don't know what that
is. This takes a while, actually.
So anyway, so the
it's
point
rendering,
is that,
it's rendering it.
Yeah, so the point is that what this lets you do is actually have a really easy way to build little creatures. And it's just
now,
a lot of fun.
They're all symmetric. I found it hard to build anything too weird because it's so symmetric. Right?
I think you can actually turn the
symmetry off. Can you turn symmetry off?
Symmetry off, right. Yeah. And so that's just one of the... It's easier to get started.
Yeah, it's a good starting point, yeah.
You know, with being symmetrical, because most of it will be. But then you can go in there and turn that off. You can paint, you know, so a lot of the sculpting tools from what they bought Mudbox, and so a lot of the sculpting tools have found their way there. And so there's a lot of stuff where, and what's really interesting is that what they're doing, I think, really well, if you look at this here, you can see you can start to, let's see here, if I want to sculpt, my battery's going low, and I'll turn up the power so you can just kind of see it, but you can start to see me sculpting, you know, sculpting this creature out. And, so, you know, what they're doing is they're taking a lot of the technologies that, you know, that Autodesk has acquired and...
You understand how sophisticated this is, right?
Because really,
to me,
hard.
It's like, cool.
This was very,
it's hard to do in an iPad.
Yeah. It's
in real time.
It's quite a thing. It's quite a thing to be able to do this. And so, anyway, it's a lot of fun. It's $1.99. It's iPad only. And, you know, for $1.99 for less than a coffee, I would highly suggest giving it a shot.
And then you can print.
So
you can actually
done.
Make a 3D. And this is what I wanted to do. Have you ordered any objects from it?
I have not ordered any objects.
Because this is what I wanted to
do.
John sent me
too,
a note saying you really ought to order an object for next iPad today.
So you can.
You render it. And then that goes to a service where you can actually get a physical model.
You can design it and then you
can paint it and all that stuff too. You got to paint it, color it.
Yeah. So your
son's been using this, Malachi?
Malachi thinks it's awesome. Like he saw me playing with it and he's like, oh, and he started going in there and painting on it and putting it together. And
that's so
cool. it's crazy. I look at my kids, their reality, because they spend so much time, you know, playing around with the iPads that, you know, being able to do this is just like, compared to when I grew up, when I was trying, you know, I was excited because I could get pixels to turn on my Apple IIe.
It's such a different world. They're growing
like
up
your
in.
Little, it's so amazing.
You kids, you don't know. We used to have to take a putty knife to clay.
We didn't have Boolean functions. We had to draw those polygons by hand in the snow, walking backwards.
1, 2, 3D creature.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3D creature. And
now you mentioned 1, 2, 3 catch before, which is really cool.
Pretty
as
much
well.
All the Autodesk iPad apps just go up, spend $10,
some are free.
And download them all.
1, 2, 3D catch is free.
Yeah,
but this one is not $1.99.
And you can see them all kind of slowly could find their way to working together. But Autodesk is just knocking it out of the park.
Really cool.
With the consumer apps, and you just wouldn't expect it because what they're really known for is really
look
high.
At that.
Yeah,
could I do that?
You could do that. They built those in there.
You'd have to be pretty good.
Yeah, but you know. You can do it. It's pretty amazing. Look at my son.
You can make
the other thing is you can open
onward.
These. So my son opened this crab.
Yeah.
And then he went to town on the crab. Like you can open that up and then keep on editing
existing ones.
It's really awesome.
I love the idea that you can get a physical printout.
Yeah,
of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Wow.
Anyway,
it is like Spore.
A little bit, but a little bit more.
Yeah.
A little more control.
You get it. It's a real thing.
Yeah.
Andy Anatko, your pick of the week.
This is a really fun / useful app for the iPad called MyScript Calculator. It is a drawable math program that I just keep playing with and playing with and playing with. So if you want to do a calculation, let's say I want to find out what like 17 divided by 5 is, you draw it on there and it will turn that into an actual solution. And then you can just keep adding to it. Now I want the square root of that.
Whoa, neat.
And what's that? Times the cosine of, let's say, 42 degrees. Oh, wait, did I say 42? I actually meant 13 degrees.
Oh, wow.
Great. And now that's like the angle that I want, but I need to have, and then it can even do like math. So if I want to find out that times what equals 1,000 or 1,100. I'm running out of space here.
Look at that.
And the answer is 55.659. And so
that is really sweet.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't understand absolutely everything, but you can see, again, you just keep messing around with this and messing around with this because
I'm going to put it. It's Android also. I'm going to put it on my Galaxy Note because I could use the stylus with that.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
it's
cool.
It's because you download it because it's just plain fun to type things and work with these things. But then you find out that I find that it's actually my go-to calculator because I kind of prefer to do multiplication that way instead of tapping it in. And then you find yourself in the situation where I actually do need to know if I want to chop this length of wood into X number of pieces, how long will each piece going to be? Write it as an equation, then just simply substitute in the variable that I want. It'll calculate the variable, and it means I no longer have to cross multiply and divide whenever I know a basic formula, but don't know. Oh goodness, it's fun and it's free, and the dang thing actually works.
It shouldn't be free. What are they thinking?
It's fantastic. It's like finger painting with math.
Yeah,
I'm downloading.
It's like, I look at this app, I downloaded it a couple of weeks ago, and I just was like, he should charge for this just to make sure that he makes lots of money at it. So he just keeps on making it cooler.
He also makes a notepad app. Same guy, Vision Objects, MyScript Memo. Interesting. And then they do have a paid app. So I guess the whole thing is to get you into the paid app at some point.
Yeah, just
which
doing
does all of the
thing.
Above.
Just do it. Just, yeah, with this sucky app that doesn't do anything remarkable at all.
Wow, I want to try it as a notebook app. It's $8 for the notebook app, but then you can do other things in addition to the math. Wow, and then the trial version is MyScript Memo. Neat. Vision Objects is the company. MyScript Calculator. Install them all.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
Yeah, really neat. Hey, I want to thank you all for being here. Renee Ritchie's from iMore.com, a great site, a must-read site for anybody who's into the Apple ecosystem and what's happening. Great place for rumors. And
we have a bunch of iWatch stuff up and a bunch of other stuff up this week.
Have you got any confirming details on the iWatch?
I have heard that it is going ahead, that the project is moving forward.
Wow. That is intriguing.
Yeah.
iMore.com. Read more at iMore. Alex Lindsay's with the Pixel Core.
Hey, I posted my one of my first pictures from our school in Rwanda.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, so we...
Where'd you post it?
On my G Plus page. On my G Plus. So if you go up there and check it out, it's... We are now using Google Hangouts to do classes. So we did our first class today where I teach from my house in Petaluma in Rwanda.
What?
Yeah, so we're doing, you know, so...
What time do you have to work if you're...
It's easy, actually. It turns out 8 a.m. my time is 6 p.m. there. Oh, okay. So it's actually a perfect...
Look at, there they are.
Look at those guys. So they're...
Oh, man, so that's in the Hangout. So cool.
And so, yeah, there they are. So that's they're in the Hangout. So they've got projectors there, and they're able to ask questions, and I can, you know, share my screen and show them, you know, what
now,
I'm doing.
Now, this is your school. This is a Pixel Core school in Rwanda.
Exactly.
Wow.
So this is, and that was...
Do they
this
have
morning.
Some live instructors as well?
Yeah, we have two live instructors down there. We have Ryan. Remember Ryan Ewell?
Yeah.
Ryan Ewell is down
there. He's down there teaching.
He's down there teaching.
That's really
and then
neat.
And then
in
also.
Fact, I remember when he was going, he was had a little trepidation, and now he says, I'm never coming back.
Yeah, it's good life.
Africa's I love
good
it.
Life. Yeah, yeah. So and Alfred is also down there. So that was our first test of running a class in Rwanda from. From here, and we're going to be doing it pretty often. So the idea is to give them videos, video training, and they'll do the training, and then we'll have discussions about
really
what
neat.
They did and everything else. So we're pretty excited
Bravo.
About it. So check it out.
Pixelcore.com, and of course, follow Alex at Alex Lindsay.
I'll be posting Alex more. Lindsay, if you're interested in that distance learning and all the stuff that we're doing there, just follow me on Twitter, Alex Lindsay, or on all the pictures and real posts will be on G+.
LINDSAY. Andy Nocco writes for the Chicago Sun-Times. What you working on right now?
Probably have a post about the Apple kerfuffle today in some way, shape, or form sometime tonight.
The security issue.
Issue. And I've also got a couple of things in the pipeline that are just sort of clearing out old reviews that I held off on to learn more stuff about. But now the clock is definitely running down, and it's like nobody really wants to know. The Palm Pre... Maybe I still don't really know how I feel about it, but I should probably review it sooner rather than later.
The Palm Pre.
The original one, the Pre minus.
Yes. There's a new one? Oh, crap. How much time I spent photographing that over the weekend? Oh, you just can't win.
I hear there's something coming along called the Trio that is just going to blow you away.
To think HTC was making Trios for a while, and now look at them.
They're struggling. They're dying. Although I have to say, they showed the new HTC One, which looks like a very nice phone and clearly calls out to the iPhone 5. It's metal. It has that kind of look and feel to it.
The double press on the home button, yeah. I was blogging for Android Central this morning. They needed more hands because they had events in New York and at London at the same time. So I was writing HTC One stories.
It's phone season. We're going to see lots of new phones, including a S4 in March. The thing I find interesting, and this might explain why Apple was slow to go to 8 megapixels. This new HTC One is a 4 megapixel camera. Mm-hmm. And what they're saying is, you know, this megapixel race has been bad for phone photography because it makes the sensor sizes aren't getting bigger. So the pixel sizes are getting smaller, which means they're not as good. And it's better to stay with a 4 megapixel.
2 micron.
It's only a micron.
It's an 8 megapixel sensor that downsamples down to 4 because it uses light value from 4 pixels.
Gives you better low light. They have built-in hardware image stabilization. This is going to be very intriguing. I think the real race, one of the real races is in camera phones.
Yeah. I think it's camera phones, and I think it's light sensitivity, not resolution.
Right.
I think that this, you know, definitely
just better pictures. I mean, that's we're about to start a whole new show, but yeah, that's now everybody has LTE. Now everybody has a large screen. Now everybody has like multi-core processors. We're running out of things that they can put into a camera that will cause someone who's testing out a new phone to say, "Wow, I want the phone that will do that." And it really is the way that the Lumia 920 absolutely humiliates the iPhone 5 in low light in so many situations. That's like, there is a failure point that Apple needs to address with the iPhone 6. Hopefully.
Blur and grain. Those are the two things.
There's also a 1080p 4.7-inch 468 ppi display on that thing.
Yep. Yeah, that's what I'm interested in. I want a high res screen. I don't necessarily need a bigger screen. I have a bigger screen with my Note, but it's not that high of a resolution.
I'm just curious to see if I'm going to need to get radial keratotomy surgery just to appreciate the increase in resolution.
Thank you all for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly on Tuesday mornings, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. If you want to watch live, it'd be great to have you. Just tune in twit.tv, but we do make on-demand versions after the fact available wherever you can download shows, including twit.tv/MBW, so you don't have to miss an episode, audio and video on demand. Hey, thanks everybody for being here. We'll see you next time. Now get back to work. Break time is over.